Top of the evening, everyone. I am Joseph Cotto, and I am very glad to say that Halsey English is joining me tonight. It's been far too long since he's last been on the show. I hope to be featuring him quite a bit over the ensuing months to talk about a great many subjects, one of which obviously is the downfall of Hollywood, and he has perhaps a surprising degree of insight about that. But before we get into any of it, Halsey, how's it going?
I am doing very well, better than I deserve.
Excellent. That's always good to hear. And the Hollywood issue is obviously of relevance because Hollywood, even in its weakened state, does have enduring pop cultural power. So Halsey, before I delve into the subject matter, why don't you explain your background in business and how that pertains to the movie industry?
Well, I mean, for years, I was a business development consultant, and I actually represented quite a few artists in terms of actors, in terms of musicians, but I worked closely with Hollywood for a little while. I mean, it was more on the technology side than it was the talent side. I gave up on talent really fast. It's it's a thankless job that is just, it's too hard to, I don't know, not kill yourself doing. But dealing with artists is just, it's rough, you know, but I have a considerable amount of experience dealing with people in Hollywood.
Yeah. Artists are, I don't want to stereotype, but they tend to be volatile people. And so whether one's representing them or doing something else, managing them, it is notoriously difficult work.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And they are every word that you didn't want to say.
What would you say is the most difficult aspect of dealing with artists?
Because they think they're better than the industry. Mm-hmm. And even if they're right, it doesn't matter. The industry exists independent of them. Uh-huh. So if they think that, like, oh, well, the song I wrote is such a no-brainer that everyone's going to give me a gigantic record contract and I'm going to make millions of dollars and everyone's going to love me. But it doesn't always work that way. You know, and you have to play the game the same as anyone else. And if you try to get away with not playing the game, then there's a good chance you're going to find yourself out on your ass.
Yeah, a lot of artists don't want to play the game and they wind up in a very bad situation, to say the least. I mean, there are so many examples that come to mind, but this is not a discussion about Hollywood or entertainment industry history, at least not, you know, extended history, recent history for sure, and one might even struggle to call it history considering what we're discussing is still going on. So I will I will just get into that right now. I'll start talking about Hollywood broadly, then get into the specifics of, I think, the best example of the troubles transpiring, Disney. So 2022 and 2023, they marked a seismic shift in the landscape of Hollywood. There was a convergence of factors that contributed to the unprecedented upheaval in Tinseltown. There was a disruptive impact from COVID-19. Obviously, there are financial struggles of Hollywood going woke. There was the streaming revolution, corporate mergers, and cultural shifts. And the industry found itself navigating uncharted waters. Now, trying to figure out why that is, there's obviously not one reason, but there are a few things that definitely deserve consideration. First and foremost, COVID-19, its unrelenting disruption, the pandemic emerged as a destructive force in Hollywood, and that caused a ripple effect across the entire filmmaking process. Studios faced delays, budget constraints, safety concerns, and theaters grappled with closures as well as reduced capacities. Of course, there were dwindling revenues. This was an unforeseen challenge, and it set the stage for Hollywood being in flux, grappling with the need to adapt to a new normal. Woke Hollywood, that's a term that gets thrown around a lot. Obviously, this had quite a few financial struggles. It faced Hollywood in its woke phase, faced a significant financial setbacks. Studios and distribution labels collectively lost over $500 million in 2022 alone. That fiscal downturn stood in stark contrast with major studios, streamers, and cable providers that netted a combined $808 $1.3 trillion, a considerable drop from the previous year's $1.35 trillion. Woke outfits, including industry giants like the Walt Disney Company, Netflix, and Comcast, bore the brunt of the financial downturn. The term "get woke, go broke" gained prominence, underscoring the financial risks associated with altering legacy franchises to fit what could be described as a forced narrative. Second factor, the streaming boom was a double-edged sword. Although, would this really be the second factor or the third factor? I guess it depends on how much you morph COVID-19 into the financial struggles that have been going on independent of it. It's sort of like at a point of distinction, that difference. But whatever the case, the streaming boom definitely was a double-edged sword for the industry. It expanded content accessibility, but brought with it heightened competition, market fragmentation, and consumer confusion. With an abundance of platforms and services, audiences were faced with a myriad of choices, adding an extra layer of uncertainty to an industry already grappling with transformative changes. Then there was the Warner Brothers Discovery merger. That was a real industry shakeup. The merger of Warner Brothers and Discovery instigated a major shakeup in the industry. The new entity sought to streamline operations, cut costs, and restructure leadership, I guess restoring leadership as well. But that led to layoff resignations and clashes among executives. This corporate realignment injected an element of uncertainty that reverberated throughout Hollywood, impacting the industry's structure and dynamics. Next up was the Netflix subscriber loss that definitely planted the seeds of doubt in the industry. Netflix, which is the undisputed streaming giant, experienced an unexpected loss of subscribers, raising doubts about the sustainability and profitability of the streaming business model. The subscriber exodus prompted critical reflections on the quality and appeal of Netflix's original content, signaling a potential turning point for the streaming giant. Then, of course, there was the WGA strike. The Writers Guild of America strike disrupted the production and release of numerous movies and TV shows. Writers demanded better pay, contracts, and working conditions, while studios and networks resisted these demands. This standoff underscored the persistent struggle for what folks in Hollywood would call equitable treatment, and it certainly shed light on challenges faced by writers in the industry. Now, as that was happening, something else was taking place. The box office slump, changing audience preferences, drove that. Despite the release of anticipated blockbusters like Top Gun, Maverick, Avatar, The Way of Water, and The Batman, the box office experienced a protracted slump. This decline highlighted the evolving preferences and behaviors of audiences, who showed a reluctance to attend theaters and a growing inclination to watch movies at home or on their devices. Now, as if all this wasn't enough, there's the rise of cancel culture and, of course, a social media backlash. Cancel culture and the social media backlash emerged as potent forces affecting the reputations and careers of many Hollywood figures. Accusations of misconduct, controversy, or political incorrectness led to boycotts, petitions, and lawsuits, illustrating the impact of online communities on public figures. The impact of cancel culture played out in various instances. Here are just four that come to mind. Tony Dungy faced an attempted cancellation in 2022 for supporting the March for Life, but stood firm in his beliefs. Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, was canceled in February of 2022 for controversial race comments leading to self-publishing. Garth Brooks, country music star, faced cancellation in March 2022 for performing at President Kamala Harris's inauguration, but emphasized unity and respect. Chris Rock, the comedian, faced backlash in September of 2022 for a controversial joke, highlighting the delicate balance between artistic freedom and societal sensitivity. At least that's what some people describe this. I'll just leave the subjective element there. People can make of it what they will. These are just four examples of cancel culture playing out in the entertainment industry broadly. You could say the media broadly, but obviously Hollywood is a major part of America's mass media superstructure. So then getting to Hollywood specifically, there is the decline of creativity and originality. The industry's decline in both became really evident through an abundance of remakes, reboots, sequels, prequels, spinoffs, adaptations, and franchises, often falling far short of expectations. These productions highlighted an industry struggling to deliver fresh and innovative content that resonates with audiences. Now, the last factor is, I mean, people will, there is dispute about which is the most important. Obviously, all of these are very important. That's why they're being discussed. But there is the loss of trust and credibility. The exposure of scandals, corruption, fraud, abuse, and deception led to a palpable loss of trust and credibility within Hollywood. This tarnished the image of the industry, necessitating a reevaluation of the individuals and institutions involved and underlining the imperative for increased transparency and accountability. Looking back at 2022 and 2023, they ushered in a transformative period for Hollywood, marked by a confluence of challenges that reshaped the industry's trajectory. From financial struggles and streaming shifts to corporate mergers and cultural reckonings, Hollywood faced a multifaceted upheaval, and it continues to do so. As the industry navigates the aftermath of these turbulent years, it must learn from the lessons presented, striving to rebuild trust, rekindle creativity, and fortify its foundations for resilience. Future. The legacy of this transformative period will undoubtedly leave an indelible mark on the entertainment capital of the U.S., arguably of the world, even though alternatives to Hollywood have been popping up across the world considerably over the last few decades. But I mean, it's really picked up steam since, one might say, the 2000s. Now, looking at perhaps the most acute example of negative issues, it would be Disney. Getting into the whole controversy with DeSantis, which is what typically comes to mind when Disney comes up, really is not the point here. What I would like to point out is something that Finbold.com wrote this year. It said, as it happens, Disney stock has declined over 11% in the past year and as much as 43.3% over the past 3 years, from the $168.17 where its price stood on January the 29th, 2021. According to the most recent stock price figures retrieved by Finbold on January the 29th of 2024. This brings up something interesting from Ted Cruz, although you first have to read Disney's filing with the SEC from November. Part of it said that the company's profits and revenues are adversely impacted when our entertainment offerings and products, as well as our methods to make our offerings and products available to consumers, do not achieve sufficient consumer acceptance. Further, consumers' perceptions of our positions on matters of public interest, including our efforts to achieve certain of our environmental and social goals, often differ widely and present risks to our reputation and brands. Now, Ted Cruz, in response to what Disney said, brought up some interesting stuff. This was on his Verdict podcast. He said, now that is one of the most stunning corporate disclosures I've ever read, because what that means is, number one, Disney has lost billions of dollars. The phrase "go woke, go broke," Disney has sadly embodied that phrase. I'm sure Walt Disney is spinning in his grave at horrors as what has happened to his namesake. Cruz also mentioned that the fact they put this in their SEC disclosure means, number one, the money they're losing is so significant. Number two, their projections for future money that they're going to lose are so significant that their lawyer said, damn it, you have to acknowledge this in the disclosure or else you will be sued for misleading investors. In other words, we must write these words so that when investors sue us and say your executives are putting your woke politics ahead of profitability, ahead of producing entertainment that consumers want, ahead of actually producing family-friendly entertainment that kids are interested in and parents want their kids to see, that your politics matters more to you than making the business successful. They want to be able to point to this disclosure and say, no, no, sorry, you invested and we told you up front. We don't care about making a buck. Our politics is all we care about. And even if it flushes the corporate profits down the commode. I'll stop quoting Ted Cruz there. Halsey, I've been going on here for a while now. I'm sure you have so much to say that I couldn't even begin to summarize it. Anywhere you'd like to start off, please go ahead.
It's funny that you bring it up the way that you did, because I was just listening to a random podcast the other day, and I couldn't even tell you who it was, because it was one of those things where I just put on YouTube and it was it kept going after I listened to what I did want to listen to and just played like a bunch of other film critic stuff. And a guy was theorizing. Now, with all due respect to Ted Cruz, but it's always interesting when you find that the problem or that the situation completely adapts to your own politics. You know, like yes, we all like to joke around of get woke, go broke, and all of that kind of stuff. And there is some level of truth to it. But it's not everything. Because you know why? Like, Gillette razors are still a thing. And Bud Light, while it may have gotten crushed for a little bit, it's basically made like a comeback in terms of its stock price, and it's making new moves and all of that. Like, yes, there is a backlash when a company like Disney goes woke. But what he was theorizing was more that we no longer have a culture of celebrity in Hollywood. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but the thing is, it used to be that you would watch a movie because a certain celebrity was in it. They could mm-hmm. carry the whole entire movie.
Yeah.
But what's really become the trend and something that everybody does now is that it's franchises. Mm-hmm. And while you might think that Michael Keaton was the best Batman, they can always get someone new to play Batman, or they can always get someone new to play Spider-Man. And it doesn't help that the franchises that they're picking are running out of steam. Like, nobody wants to see a fifth Avengers movie or a seventh Spider-Man Begins and all of that. That's why they've been consistently losing more and more money, mm-hmm. you know? And Hollywood has tried so hard to latch on to these franchises and to promote these franchises that they've kind of killed the cult of celebrity. Now, also mm-hmm. streaming played a big part in that and all that, because we're now being exposed to all the overseas content that we never got to see before, mm-hmm. you know? And a lot of people are realizing like, oh, wait, I don't have to watch Hollywood trash because it's all that's there. Like, I can actually like, There's content for, and especially during the writer's strike, there was content from all over the world that you could see on Netflix that was actually quite good. Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't good, it was better than the trash that we were normal, like we were accustomed to seeing, mm-hmm. you know? So it's gotten to the point now where Hollywood is in a real pickle, because what are they going to do? Are they going to give up the franchise model? They can't. You know what I'm saying? The franchise model is just, they've spent billions upon billions of dollars acquiring all of these properties like Star Wars and Marvel and, you know, mm-hmm. all of this stuff. And they can't just say, oh, okay, we're done with it, because it's still drawing some level of an audience, and it has a tremendous draw overseas, mm-hmm. you know? But in the same time, they're killing their own business. Like, look when the new John Wick movie came out. Or the new Hunger Games movie came out, or the new Top Gun movie came out. People were willing to see it because the cult of celebrity, the draw of celebrity, still applies to people somewhat, like Tom Cruise, like what's it called, like Keanu Reeves and all of mm-hmm. that. But those people are getting old, and mm-hmm. you could only buy so much fantasy about an 80-year-old. Like, look at the last Indiana Jones. You know, it not only was it a piece of shit, but Harrison Ford, who normally can carry a franchise and has carried some of the biggest franchises on the planet, could do it mm-hmm. because no one believed that an 80-year-old in Indiana Jones could still be effective at his job.
Absolutely. That movie was interesting. I didn't see it, but it was interesting.
That speaks volumes, because I like the other Indiana Jones movies and I could care less about seeing it. And everyone knows I'm kind of a Star Wars buff. Like, I love the Star Wars mm-hmm. movies. And the last trilogy was so bad mm-hmm. that there's now Star Wars movies I haven't seen and Star Wars series I haven't seen, because I just don't care. Yep. Like I haven't seen the Solo movie. I haven't seen like the I forgot what the show was with the Baby Yoda. Like, I just don't care enough. And mm-hmm. and this is something like years ago, if a new Star Wars property was coming out, like, I would be one of those people that would be like opening day there to see it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've taken these franchises and made them so much more powerful than the talent in them. And they're not nurturing that next generation of stars. They're just not. And listen, I don't like the idea that Hollywood nurtures these kind of woke freaks, mm-hmm. you know? And that is an aspect where get woke, go broke really does matter.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, I could care less about seeing anything that John Cusack is in anymore. Uh-huh. You know, like, I never really did care. but there were a lot of people that did. But the fact that he can't get off social media whining about Israel or about Jews, like, why would I want to watch anything he's in anymore? And you can't shut the celebrities up anymore. It used to be they had to go on, like, you know, gay-ass Perez Hilton or something like that to get their views out. And I would never watch Perez Hilton because I don't care. You know, but now I can't sign on to social media without seeing some idiot celebrity saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Like, the idea that these celebrities have any information of value about geopolitical issues is so laughable that it's not just that I care that I disagree with them. I care that they believe that just because they've made money making movies, that they're able to, you know, tell me how to feel about politics. And that is an aspect of Get Woke, Go Broke.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I will say John Cusack, I think we both agree, very talented actor. Say Anything is probably my favorite teen drama movie, because even as you get older, it has enduring relevance. It's basically a very human story that's way a cut above average for anything that pertains to teenagers in American cinema. I'm sure you've seen it. You know, so the fact of the matter is John Cusack now defining himself with some really absurd, poorly written diatribes on Twitter. It definitely is a come down, to say the absolute least. And it does impact the negative. It makes the public image of him more negative than it would be. And, you know, the guy was definitely cool into the 90s. I mean, Gross Point Blank is another favorite of mine. I think he had a hit in the 2000s, Serendipity. But the fact of the matter is that if you do what he's done to his image, people who would have thought highly of you definitely are not going to do so. So he is a cautionary tale here, in my humble opinion.
He's not just a cautionary tale. It's that. And listen, I can call me a hypocrite all you want because I use Twitter too, but the Twitter effect has had a real negative influence on a lot of different people and industries, because people think that tweeting, A, is reality, that anyone gives a flying crap what you actually tweet about, that B, Twitter is a dialogue. It's not. Like, I guarantee you that 90% of these celebrities or anything else that tweet don't read your snarky meme comment back to them. You know, in fact, they've never heard of you. They could care less. And in fact, whoever staffer they're paying to run their Twitter account just blocks you anyway. But because of Twitter, a lot of these celebrities have decided to either outsource their tweeting to some progressive idiot that, you know, gets them in trouble, or the opposite, they're doing it themselves, and they're allowing their stupidity to flourish in a way that, you know, people who would have never cared what John Cusack said about anything are now like, oh, okay, I have a great idea. Let's stop paying attention to John Cusack because no one gives a shit. Like I don't need a dose of like hardcore anti-Semitism with my, you know, with my movies. And that's also why I'm liking a lot of the foreign content, because there's such a lack of politics in it. You know, like, I don't know who these people are. I don't know what their politics are. I don't even know what they look like outside of their roles in whatever random show I've just seen them in. So it's kind of relieving, you know, it's refreshing that you can watch a show and just enjoy it for it being a show. You know,
yeah, it's something in Hollywood, even before the calamities of the 2020s began, there was already a decline in the grandeur of the industry in the 2000s that hit with the recession, the Great Recession, beginning in 2007. By the time things began to pick back up, which would have been the early 2010s, Hollywood definitely had taken a more minimalist approach. As I'm sure you remember, movie celebrity culture in the early to mid 2000s was like people having five designer handbags on their hands, wrists, and arms at once, carrying four cell cell phones all the while, wearing mountains of designer clothes, and it just looked sort of ridiculous. It was this over-the-top sort of surreal thing. But then the recession really killed that off, and when things came back, minimalism was in vogue, which is how a lot of celebrities dress now. They dress down intentionally, like they went through the bargain bin at Target, and it's interesting how this came about, because obviously it goes back to the Great Recession, but it has staying power. And this took place at the same time as the decline of Hollywood's power due to the emergence of alternative entertainment sources, cheaper ones than, you know, going to the cinemas and you know, paying $14 for a ticket. Much cheaper, much more convenient, because you get it in your house with streaming. Now there are legitimate streaming platforms like Crackle, Tubi, Pluto TV, Plex, and there are others where, you know, people get movies and original content for free. And that makes it so the industry doesn't have as much money for glamour as it once did. So a lot of things have been happening, but I would say the decline in the prestige of Hollywood actually goes back to the Great Recession.
For sure. And I don't disagree with you on that. But I mean, go a step further, right? And you can look at the absolute extreme example of what I'm talking about, and that's Kanye West. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a billionaire. His music was popular amongst tons of demographics that typically don't even listen to rap music. He was widely regarded as a really good artist. Uh-huh. And then he opened his mouth, and he let his mental illness fly, and decided that his celebrity was more enduring than the fact that he was going on, you know, TV and in Twitter and everything else, dressed like a ninja, talking about Hitler being awesome, you know, like. And now, I mean, now it's just people don't even care what he has to say, with the exception of, I think, like, Nick Fuentes cared for a little bit. You know, but I think Nick Fuentes cared for a reason that had much more in-depth reasons than just, you know, his feelings about Jews. But, you know.
Do you think it would be explained perhaps by the revolving door in his closet?
I would think so. I would think it definitely has something to do with someone being in the closet, at least. You know, so, but again, it's, we've given a platform to these people. And, you know, with a good example of the other end of the spectrum is Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, she does comment on politics sometimes, but yeah, you know, like, oh, she'll say, I think that gay people should be able to get married, or, you know, she'll say, I would much rather Biden than Trump, or whatever milquetoast, you know, political statement she makes. But she mostly just focuses on being a musician, mm-hmm. you know, and her last tour made, what, $1 billion? Mm-hmm. You know, like, yes, she will comment on, like, I think this person is, because you kind of have to, like, it, you know, in this world we live in, but she mostly stays out of the fray. She doesn't come out and say ridiculously, you know, offensive comments to a large segment of her audience. She's just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm a musician, I make music, but I prefer, you know, Biden to Trump. And it's been wildly successful for her.
Yeah, I believe she comes from a Republican banking family in Pennsylvania. So perhaps, you know, given her views in relation to the views of, I presume, others who she's around, her relatives, she would be naturally more akin to moderating her perspective. So I think that a lot of people who are in celebrity culture really don't have any impetus for moderation. Then when they get exposed to the world beyond their window, so to speak, via social media, they learn that their views are not as popular as one might imagine. But I would say Taylor Swift, having her views, and I believe coming from a Republican family, she would be more naturally apt to presenting her perspectives in an acceptable sort of collegial fashion.
I agree with that statement. And also, like we were talking about dealing with artists and people that work in the industry, right? The vast majority of them have never been in a situation in years since they became a known entity where they've ever been told no. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they want to buy something? Sure, just go out and put it on your black card. you want to get on a private plane and fly to Tahiti for the weekend, knock yourself out. But most importantly, they could say whatever they wanted because everyone would just yes man them to death, because no one wants to lose their job working for an artist. An artist can be temperamental, mm-hmm. you know? So it's now they're in a position where people are telling them no because they're opening their mouths and talking to people that aren't on their payroll, mm-hmm. you know? And that's what you're also seeing more and more of. So
that's happening via social media, obviously. And, you know, it's inevitable. Everybody gets told no, but if you're used to being surrounded by sycophants, it's a shocking experience, even though it should not be. And if you have the money to be surrounded by sycophants, it's a bad idea to be, because you'll obviously not be able to adapt to the real world when it comes for you. And it does come for everyone at some point in some way. Very good observation you bring up. Now, Halsey, looking at the decline of Disney's value, its corporate value over a fairly short period of time, do you think that this might be any impetus for the company to turn around? Because Bob Iger, the head of Disney, who's had a far less successful second term than his first, he has said that they need to tone things down. They need to go back to basics, in a manner of speaking, simply for the sake of their profitability. But, you know, it's a publicly traded company. You have to make the SEC filings. I read from one before. But it seems that the creatives at Disney who work under him in the C-suite and certainly below them, especially in the Imagineering department, which is where basically Disney's intellectual property is generated, they seem to be completely averse to what he said. They don't really seem to care about his point of view. What do you think about what's going on?
So Disney is the example of a studio that has the Hollywood problem, mm-hmm. because Disney believes they're high on their own supply. Mm-hmm. Okay. They actually believe that in the end of the day, because they're Disney, they can change culture to the point where they don't have to give a shit what people like. Mm-hmm. So they've gone, I mean, with Disney, it used to be a little more subtle.
Oh.
Right? Like, now they've gotten to the point where, like, the Seven Dwarfs, they can't make them short because it's offensive. You know? Like, and I think it's a part of Get Woke, Go Broke. But at the same time, it's more just an idea of they believe they can tell us what to like, mm-hmm. and because there was a time, especially in kids' content, where there wasn't a viable alternative. Mm-hmm. Now there's tons of viable. I mean, that shit, the Daily Wire makes mm-hmm. kids' content now.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, how I do want to get into the Daily Wire, but I don't want to get too off track with Disney. We'll just wrap this up first. Looking at Disney, do you think that they will turn things around? Because they're doing, as I mentioned before, incredibly badly. And if they don't turn things around, things are only going to get worse. I mean, they made their disclosure in their filing. Obviously, Ted Cruz did his analysis of that. From a business perspective, they just can't continue as they are. I mean, it would end with basically them selling off a lot of their intellectual property, perhaps to Apple or someone else, at a very low rate, you know, by the time they hit rock bottom. And then the company would just be broken up into smaller enterprises, and perhaps Disney would straggle on as its most profitable endeavor, which is a property management organization. It's something that owns theme parks and various entities adjacent to theme parks. I do think Disney would always live on in that sense. But otherwise, it looks like they're headed for disaster.
They probably are headed for some kind of disaster because, as I said, they have viable competition. Mm-hmm. What they've been making is trash. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Disney is like the government. They're so infected to their core with garbage that they don't have a viable way out, because they would have to fire like 30,000 people and start over from scratch. And the moment they did, they would have to make such a bold statement that listen, stranger things have happened. Mm-hmm. You know, Donald Trump got elected in 2016. So, I mean, definitely stranger things have happened. But at the same time, do I think that they're capable of it? No, I don't. I mean, look, maybe they'll start selling off stuff. I mean, Star Wars, how much? I think they paid $3 billion for it. And how many billions of dollars have they pumped into the uh-huh. franchise since then? And I don't think it's done well for them. Uh-huh. And in fact, I think they murdered a franchise that was easily the most popular ever, mm-hmm. you know, and they've murdered it to the point where Star Wars fans don't even care anymore. Mm-hmm. You yeah. know, did you see that for the next three movies, they hired a Pakistani lesbian feminist
yes.
to direct them? I mean, that's awesome. Can you get more stereotypical, like, oh my God, talk about doubling down on a bad bet? Like, mm-hmm. that's I might go watch those just mm-hmm. to see what a train wreck they are. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
But why do you think they would do something like that when they know? I mean, Disney knows, there's no question they know. The SEC filing made it clear, and Bob Iger saying they need to get away from politics, essentially. Why would Disney double down on this poor strategy? And some would say, well, it goes back to Iger, but it seems obvious to me that he does not have real control over the organization. Because if something like this happens, when he's saying they need to do the opposite, and they make an official filing that basically says, yeah, we're in real trouble, and then agents of the organization do something that's going to get them into even worse trouble. It seems that the business minds at Disney, even though they should be the ones steering the ship, in fact, are not doing so. And I have to assume it's because they've been relieved of their command, however unofficially.
I think that you can also compare it to like Harvard University, right? Like Harvard University has been, and probably will even be for a while, considered the cream of the crop, right? They're the best. Like they're the elite of elite universities. Mm-hmm. And they have been utterly destroyed mm-hmm. by progressive values, uh-huh. right? Like utterly destroyed. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like, oh, white people aren't going to go there anymore. Jews aren't going to go there anymore. They're losing money. Like their entire being is destroyed mm-hmm. because they can't get out of their own way. I mean, look at what they had as a president, like someone who couldn't even write a dissertation, let alone, you know.
Uh-huh. She plagiarized it. It was, you know, and then they denied it was plagiarism. And then it was found that what she did violated their own student policy about plagiarism, that a violation of, you know, this policy could get you expelled. So she was ultimately let go, but she kept her tenured professorship at the school. So it's not like she fell to the ground without a solid golden parachute. But, you know, she still lost her job, and that's something. Yeah, Disney is in, I think, a similar situation. It'll be interesting to see what comes with it, because I was just at Disney World less than 2 weeks ago. I was at Disney Village, which now calls itself Disney Springs. If anybody's ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. And the vibe of the place is not progressive. I'll say that much. It looks like an ideal shopping village in a well-to-do Republican suburb of some city. It's actually surrounded by the last few well-to-do Republican suburbs in Orange County, which is where Orlando is. There are non-progressive vibes there for sure. And yet the company is so woke. And I think that's really, more than anything else, indicates the disconnect between who Disney's core consumer base is and who the people who are churning out Disney content are. I mean, if the people who are churning out Disney content had their way, Disney Springs would look like the Castro in San Francisco. But obviously that would be a bridge too far for its consumer base. But the folks at Disney have alienated their consumer base so thoroughly that you see this company losing so much of its valuation.
So again, it's what you're seeing is a shift mm-hmm. that for some reason, maybe, as I said, just because Disney is such a behemoth, they're not able to correct this. But when I was a kid, going to Disney World was like, or Disney, I don't know, whichever one's in Florida, Disney was World. Like, was something parents saved for years mm-hmm. just to be able to bring your kids to Disney World. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's to the point, like I know people that are the most prime like audience to bring their kids to Disney World. They have the money to go. Uh-huh. They have the time off and the kids, all of that stuff. Right. Like they, and when they look at what it takes to go to Disney World, like at this mm-hmm. point, it always was you had to wait online for like an hour to on something. But now you have to schedule your hour wait. You know, like you have to put together a ticket schedule where like you have to be at a certain ride at a certain time and show your scheduled appointment, and then they let you wait for an hour to go on it. And then if you wound up waiting an hour and a half and you're late to your next appointment, while you're online waiting for the one ride, you have to basically sell off your appointment to someone else and trade for a different appointment. Like, who on earth would want to go through that just to go on a vacation? A vacation is supposed to be a place you go to have fun and relax, mm-hmm. not to get so stressed out that you can't even, you know, like move about it. And Disney was always about materialism. And
absolutely.
Listen, America is a material country. We absolutely. Have been for a very long time. But I don't think the money's there to be as materialistic as people used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, especially because you don't have to, like, would I like to go out and spend $1 million doing like silly shit like going island hopping in the Caribbean or so? Of course I would, but I don't have the money. Mm-hmm. And even if I did, I could think of a zillion things I'd rather spend it on.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the same with me. The situation with Disney really is emblematic of the problems in Hollywood. Now, Halsey, before we get into the Daily Wire, because this actually does build into that, talking about the rise of alternative entertainment media platforms, I did mention the free streaming services, of which there are several more than I brought up. There are so many now that I'm actually losing track of them. But people are able to get legitimate, lawful, free entertainment content through these outlets. And obviously, that means there's much, much less money to be made, if any money at all, from producing shows and movies. So this, one might think, would wake people in Hollywood up to see that, hey, you know, we really can't think we're as big as we used to be, because now people are getting stuff for free that they would used to pay for, that they would pay for a decade ago, unless they wanted to break federal law. But things absolutely are different now. And just the economics of the situation should humble people. But apparently that's not the case. What do you think?
Please repeat the question. You faded out for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. That happens sometimes. No, but I was saying that Hollywood has been humbled by the rise of these legitimate free streaming platforms that churn out content that people don't have to pay anything for. And there's such a, if these companies turn a profit at all, as I said, there's such a low profit margin, if they turn a profit at all, that it makes the entire entertainment industry more humbled, just because it cannot demand the sort of money it used to get because the dollars aren't being paid out from the consumer. You'd think this situation would humble the people in Hollywood, but it seems not to have any thoughts on the matter.
It's not just that the content is free. Yes, that's a plus. It's not just that it's free. It's good. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like, I can't even tell you how many shows I've watched over the last year that people told me, like, oh, why would you watch something stupid like that? And I wound up enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And then when I told people about it, they legit had never heard of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I'd say, oh, like The Last Kingdom, which wound up being like a huge Netflix thing. I watched that from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when it was on the BBC. But you could see it. You could get it on Netflix, and it turned into a very popular show, but at the time it was a nothing show. Mm-hmm. with a pretty small budget, but it was very good. It had no famous actors or actresses in it, and it was really well done. I mean, I happen to like the show just because I lived over there, but there's that Israeli mm-hmm. show Fauda, which is fantastic and was made all in Israel with Israeli actors. Again, you don't know any of them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just, and look, I understand Netflix isn't free because you have to pay the $20 a month or whatever it is, but in a sense it's free, because if you want to watch a movie at the theater, you're paying $20. Mm-hmm. So and you're getting all the content you want. And I mean, HBO Max, they bought Discovery, they still have Cinemax and all of that. So a subscription to HBO Max, which I think is $10 a month, now gives you full access to Discovery, to a whole bunch of others. Like, I've been watching shows, like they have shows on like the origins of the Bible, like people trying to scientifically prove the Bible happened and stuff like that. Do you think these things get any kind of promotion? Of course they don't. But it's something I'm interested in. And it used to be I had to crawl through hundreds of thousands of YouTube videos to try to find something interesting. But now I don't have to, you know, and I would rather spend a day doing that than like oh my God, I heard there's a new movie coming out by so-and-so, and for 50 bucks, I can go to the theater and watch it. Like, no, I don't want to go to the theater. I want to lie in bed in my underwear and watch it and not have to care about whether some Shaniqua sitting in front of me decides to yell at the screen or throw popcorn, you know?
No, I hear you. Yeah, the rise of streaming, whether they are the paid platforms such as Netflix, which, you know, wind up being very cost effective for the reasons you mentioned, or the totally free ones like Crackle, really have altered the landscape. And as I mentioned, there are some issues, of course, with the streaming industry itself, but it certainly has humbled, or should have humbled, the entertainment world. Because, like I said, now things are so much more available at low to no cost that with the money not being there to be made, you would think celebrities and people in the entertainment industry, either behind the camera or on the financial end, would decide, hey, you know, we have to really tone it down a bit. We can't be making the demands we used to make. But instead, they become very, or at least some of them, have become very prima donna ish is definitely a way of putting it. You could use some other words, but I will just say that being able to get stuff for free legitimately, not having to, like I said, violate federal law by downloading stuff, which I never did, but a lot of people did. I never would have taken the risk, but a lot of people did, you know, doing torrent downloads, that kind of thing. Now folks, you know, some people still choose to do that, but they could just legally stream stuff and they don't pay anything for it. They just have to sit through some ads. So that's definitely a revolutionary turn in the media. It's something else. It puts so much more power in the hands of consumers, but it also takes away a lot of power from folks in the entertainment industry. So Halsey, now
there's another problem that streaming solves that I always believe goes like completely unreported, right? And I'll just give a personal example.
Sure.
I love Scorsese movies, right? I even like the shitty ones. Like, I think the guy's an amazing director, and I tend to like all of the stories, even if I think they're a little far-fetched or whatever. I haven't seen his new one yet, but Flowers in the Attic Moon or whatever it is.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but I want to. I just haven't seen it yet. I've just been too busy. But here's the thing. My wife hates Scorsese movies. Like, can't stand them. She thinks they're too long. She thinks they're boring. She's not interested in the topic, right? Now, Scorsese movies used to be long, but now that he's gone to streaming, he can make the movie 3-4 hours long and nobody cares, which I love, but my wife doesn't. Now, I'm not going to find 3 hours to go to a movie theater and watch a Scorsese movie by myself, right? Secondly, if I have time, I don't want to go into another room to watch a 3-4 hour movie while my wife's in a different room watching something else, you know, and all of that. But you know what I do have? I have a half an hour here and an hour there. So I can start it, stop it, and then watch more of it tomorrow. And yes, does it suck to watch a movie broken up and not be able to watch the whole thing? Yeah, but you know what? If I really love it, I can find 3 hours maybe at a different time. But at least I can watch it at my own convenience, you know, and I can watch things that I want to watch in a way where it doesn't like negatively impact my social or family life. Like, these are also, they're so underplayed by Hollywood and everyone else that you have this convenience that you don't have to get a consensus on what to watch in order to enjoy something.
Absolutely. You know, that's something about streaming that slipped my mind, but it makes total sense. It puts more power in the hands of the consumer. That I mentioned before, and it's very true. Now, Halsey, before I ask about the Daily Wire, why do you think a lot of people in Hollywood have not caught on to the fact that technological change, namely streaming, other things too, but principally streaming, they've made it so people in Hollywood can make the kind of demands they used to make? Look at all the demands made of people in the Writers Guild, and you can certainly say there are valid issues which the strikers brought up, but at the same time, they have a weaker and weaker hand to play because there's less money to be made from making movies and TV shows. And, you know, there are more foreign markets for people to shoot movies in or TV shows in. You could double so many places for the U.S. These it seems like a lot of people in Hollywood, the WGA and, of course, the Screen Actors Guild, they both went on strike and they had their renegotiations. They don't seem to understand that what they're doing, no matter how valid the issues they bring up are, is creating a situation wherein there's less and less incentive to do business as a production company in the United States, so people will just go elsewhere.
So there's a couple things to unpack with what you just said.
Sure.
Number one, they haven't, it's not that they haven't caught on. They have caught on. The problem is they can't make the switch. It's not possible for them to do it. Mm-hmm. The reason that Netflix can drop tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars into content is they already have the paying subscriber base. Correct. To do it. Hollywood has the exact opposite model.
Exactly.
They have to make something good in order to bring in the audience. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that they can't do it. They can't, if let's say tomorrow, not Paramount, because they already have one, X Studio decided that they were going to put out Top Gun 3, right? And they knew it was a great script. Cruise was, everything was perfect about it. It was going to be just as big a hit as Top Gun 2. The problem is if they do it to streaming, to a platform that no one's heard of, millions of people are not going to sign up to a monthly recurring subscription just to watch one movie. You know what I'm saying? Especially knowing that 6 months from now, you'll be able to get it elsewhere. And if not, it doesn't matter. No one's going to pay $100 a year to watch one movie. So without that subscriber base already, look at Disney with Disney Plus. They thought that they were going to dominate the whole thing. But you know what? It turns out most people have seen the crap on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. They're willing to pay. If I really want to show my kids Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, right? And the only place I can watch it streaming is on Disney Plus, I won't. I'd rather go buy it for $10 on Apple TV or wherever else, you know, and just now I own it. And now if I want to show my kids again, great. And they're not putting out enough original content that I could give a shit, you know? So it's a chicken egg problem. Netflix already has the subscriber base. All they have to do is not piss off enough of them that they don't cancel their subscription. And by putting out good content over time, like even if they put out, let's say, I don't know how much of their stuff is woke trash, but there's a decent amount, right? But I don't have to watch it, number one. Exactly. And how much woke trash would they have to put out as opposed to good content to make me cancel my subscription? It would have to be a lot, exactly. You know, because as of right now, I just ignore the woke trash. I watch what I want to watch and I get access to a lot of stuff that I didn't even know was out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But Hollywood, they can't do that. It's just not possible. Now, a lot of them have, and you've seen this over and over and over again, some of them more successful than others, but like Paramount Plus was not a huge hit until Yellowstone, mm-hmm. you know, and they have oodles of content to put out there, but I'm not going to pay $10 a month to a streaming service just to have access to a lot of crap that I've seen already. You know, like, yes, would I like to see a movie that I enjoyed years ago and would like to see again? Sure, but I'm not going to pay $10 a month for it. You know, if I really want to see it again so bad and I can't find it on any of the streaming platforms I am a subscriber to, then I'll either rent it or buy it on Amazon or Apple or wherever. But you're not going to get me as a recurring monthly subscriber without some kind of draw that makes me want to stay in. And as I said, Paramount Plus found it by having shows that are really good, like Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. Like they were able to capitalize not only on Yellowstone, but all of the spinoffs, which are, by the way, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're really good. You know, and it's not just that, like, I'm not a big Kevin Costner fan. I don't like, but the show itself is fantastic. And the spinoffs were even better. Mm-hmm. So you know, would I pay $10 a month for that? Sure. Mm-hmm. You know,
but
Hollywood can't do it. They just can't. Cause as I said, when you're sinking $100 million into making one Marvel movie, mm-hmm. you know, or anything like that, like I'm not going to subscribe to a $10 a month and millions of people aren't going to subscribe just because they put $100 million into a Marvel movie. I'll find somewhere else to watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're going to put $20 billion into making content that I like, maybe I would, but Hollywood doesn't have that kind of money, mm-hmm. you know? So it becomes a total chicken egg problem.
And before we get to the Daily Wire, which would be unfortunately wrapping up the conversation, looking at the situation, say, at Disney, just using an example of other things going on among big Hollywood businesses, there is the doubling down with Star Wars on an agenda which has been very unpopular, a political agenda, really, but it also pertains to pop culture. And did you think it's just that the people doing this don't care whether or not what they do actually is seen by a lot of people or loses money? You said that people at Disney are delusional enough still to believe that they could drive pop cultural change, but at some level they have to see that, you know, what they've done is not move the needle in terms of pop culture. So do you think there's anything, perhaps a realization with them that this probably isn't going to go well, but they might just be deciding to do it anyway, maybe as a cash grab, maybe there's some other motivation here without focusing on the long-term health of the company that's financing their production? Any commentary on this?
I honestly don't know if there is a fix for it. I know that right now they think their ownership of Marvel and of Star Wars and all of that is going to be their saving grace, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Like, yes, the thing is, a lot of these horrible movies they make, they still make their money back. They might do really shitty and get horrible reviews and don't have any kind of staying power. Mm-hmm. But with overseas distribution, they make their money back. You know, but people don't invest in Hollywood companies to break even, you know, or just to make a slight profit. Like they expect that when they put out a $100 million movie, it's going to make $4 billion, you know, over time. And that isn't happening anymore. It just isn't. And, you know, let's get to the, I don't want to run out of time because the Daily Wire has, and it sucks because I feel like I'm like shilling almost for Ben Shapiro, and I have a lot to say about it, so I want to make sure that
absolutely, yeah, let's discuss that. Now, the Daily Wire is promoting itself as the anti-woke antidote to woke Hollywood, and it has its own streaming service, DW Plus, I believe that's the name of it. And
I have no idea what it's called.
I think that's the name. But anyway, it is phenomenally popular. They are, as I understand it, making a good deal of money each quarter. And the company is expanding its operations. It's not doing so by buying franchises. It's creating its own stuff or doing, its own non-woke take on, say, Snow White, which is Disney's, you know, woke failure, which had to get its release pushed back over a year because the basically the audience testing was so negative that they discovered it had to be depoliticized. It's going to be, you know, the woke nightmare of the non-dwarfs. But anyway, so Daily Wire is sort of using the excesses of woke Hollywood as its springboard for producing content in opposition to the Hollywood mainstream. And I know you have a lot to say about this. So what is your perspective on what the Daily Wire is doing? What do you think it will be in the long run in terms of success or a failure? I'm sure there's a hell of a lot more you have to say. Please go ahead.
So here's the thing. First, I have to always issue this qualifier. Everybody loves to call people like Ben Shapiro or Matt Walsh or all of them like, oh, they're shills for Zionism or they're shills for this or they're shills for DeSantis or whatever it may be. I honestly believe 100% they believe everything they say. Really? They're just very milquetoast Republican religious conservatives. That's who they are. Okay, that's why they're all lockstep on abortion. That's why they're all lockstep on almost everything. It's not a corporate image. It's just who they are. And you could disagree with them, but to try to like make it seem like they're paid off by like rhinos or whatever. No, they are just that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like all of them would die on the hill of abortion, even though it's obvious that it's going to wreck the Republican Party in any election where they front and center it, because that's what they believe. But back when Daily Wire, and I don't watch his show enough to like I think every now and then someone will like send me a link and be like, oh, this one was really good, and I'll pay attention for 10 minutes. But I'm not like a big fan, so I don't watch Matt Walsh or Ben Shapiro all that much. But when they first announced they were going to take on Hollywood and they were going to put out a movie, right? Mm-hmm. I said it then and I'll say it now. Good for them. Like, you know what? Someone's trying. Because all the time you hear, oh, Hollywood is a mess of woke garbage. Hollywood is owned by the gay lobby or the tranny lobby or the minority lobby or all of this. Oh, we need content that is going to speak to us, to white people, to conservatives, to this and this, and not be woke trash. But no one's doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one's going out and saying, I'm opening a production company that's specifically based on not woke trash. Mm-hmm. Ben Shapiro and his company did it. Mm-hmm. Now, the first movie they put out was called Run, Hide, Fight or something like that. Uh-huh. And I didn't have to subscribe because I wouldn't subscribe. I don't like Daily Wire enough to care about subscribing because whatever. But they released it on YouTube, right? And it wasn't going to be on YouTube like always. It was going to be on for like this one premiere night. Uh-huh. So you know what I said? I said, I'm just, if anything, I could do a show about it. Now, I watched it. It was garbage. And I didn't even think it was conservative, to tell you the truth. I think it was like the opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a whole critique of it on my channel because the whole point was that a conservative principle is responsible gun ownership. And like this girl that was in Run, Hide, Fight, like was stealing guns. Like her father was teaching her like how to use guns, even though it was obvious she was nuts. Mm-hmm. Like it was the opposite of what he should have stood for. But at the same time, somebody's doing it, you know, and I don't know how much money they make, but it must be quite a bit. Like, because I know they announced they're putting like $120 million into kids content.
Yeah,
they were putting $50 million into producing. I heard they have a new movie out that's actually really funny. It's about like a bunch of guys that were losers when they played high school basketball, so they decide to enter
the league. That was released. I did not see it. I believe
neither did I. Yeah, but I heard it's funny. Someone I know who did see it said it was really funny. But if it ever comes to a place where I could watch it where I don't have to subscribe to the Daily Wire, I might do it. But I'm not subscribing to the Daily Wire. But love Ben Shapiro or hate him, love Jeremy Boring or Matt Walsh or any of the other kind of lunatics over there, at least they're doing it. They're taking their own money and they're saying, okay, this is our vision for what an entertainment company should be. Now, as I said, I don't like it. I don't watch their content, but at least they're trying. Uh-huh. No one else seems to be actually trying. Uh-huh. Like all the people that love to bitch about woke Hollywood and all the people that when a non-woke movie, which is usually not non-woke, uh-huh. it's just not woke in and of itself. Uh-huh. You know, like Top Gun 2 wasn't woke or not woke. It just was a decent movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, so people go, oh, Tom Cruise, he figured it out. You know, if he had gone woke, he would have gone broke. So he made a movie that appealed to not woke people. It's like, no, he just made a movie and he didn't give a shit about politics. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's capable to do without taking a position on whether, you know, dwarves should be short or not. Like it doesn't matter. Like you could be just normal, you know, and not be like considered like a right wing bastion of goodness. But the Daily Wire at least decided like we're going to take some of this money we're making and try our hand at making non woke content, like content for people that would subscribe to the Daily Wire. You know, mm-hmm. I give them credit for at least having the balls and the commitment to do it. Now, will they succeed? I have no idea. I have no idea if anyone will care enough about their kids' content to make a dent in anything. But at least they're trying.
They most certainly are, and they do deserve credit for that. I think that it would be a good idea to have a, not an anti-woke, but a non-woke and a-woke, if you will, a political sort of movie house where good productions can happen, where good stories are told. There is definitely a market for this sort of thing. The Daily Wire, though, obviously is going the explicitly anti-woke direction. I believe Matt Walsh was in that movie about basketball, which tells you all you need to know about it. Yeah. But I would like to see just apolitical stuff, and hopefully there will be a studio like that in time that just doesn't delve into these issues that are trendy nowadays. But, you know, people like to cater to certain groups, and it is what it is. Now, Halsey, the last question tonight, I know you have to get going, is do you expect this to be a better or worse year business-wise for Hollywood?
I don't know, because I seem to I'm going to be honest with you about this one. I haven't been streaming much, and I've been working so many hours that I don't even like. This is also a personal preference. Uh-huh. I don't care about the news so much anymore. So I now vacillate between we're headed for the ultimate financial collapse or it's just overblown and everything's going to be fine. Uh-huh. So like, but that's because I don't pay enough attention anymore to what's going on. But I think that we're in for a financial reckoning. I think it's coming because we've spent an ungodly amount of money in the last few years. Our political situation doesn't seem to be getting any better. We have a gazillion people flying over the border. The cities are crumbling. Mm-hmm. And I think that money is not going to be as available in this coming year. Uh-huh. And I think that entertainment is one of those things that takes a nice strong hit. And I think that people have already been giving too much of a leeway to this content they don't like. Uh-huh. I think that people will stop watching Disney just because they don't have the money and because it's not worth taking the chance. Mm-hmm. You know, like no one's going to go, oh, I'll go watch this shitty Disney movie with my kids because, worst case scenario, you know, they have like two trannies hooking up and like whatever. And I could just tell my kids like, yeah, we don't do that. But I think now people are going to have to legitimately make that decision like, okay, I don't have an entertainment budget right now. Like if I have a streaming service, my kids can find shit to watch on it. Like we can watch stuff as a family, but I don't have the money to be going out to the movies and spending $100 on a movie right now. I think we're going to see a lot of that, you know?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, particularly in closing, because there has been a lot of stuff out there in the media about the economy's doing great, it's firing on all cylinders, and you see the jobs numbers, it's really driven by the growth of public sector employment, the private sector is actually contracting, but then, you know, you hear about most Americans, not most Americans, but a good deal of Americans having no money in their bank account and being in debt and not being able to meet, in a general sense, the cost of living. So we get all these, you know, wildly conflicting stories about the same economy. But I think the point is one that you made, that a lot of people are really having to pinch pennies and they have to decide what is worth their money in a sense that they would not have been made to do beforehand. So even though some folks say the economy is great, in reality, it's not for the overwhelming majority of people. They say as much whenever they're asked about it. And I do think that looking at the economy in terms of what employment is rather ridiculous because, you know, do people like the job they have? Are they underemployed? Are they working two jobs to get by, which obviously goes to underemployment? Have they just given up work and they're not included in the official unemployment number? It's you know, several questions there that are several discussions, several episodes in and of themselves.
Well, I can make one comment and as like kind of my closing thing. And sure. This is obviously like everyone knows I'm voting for Trump. Everyone knows that I want to vote for Trump. And everyone knows that I've been a hardcore right winger my whole life. Mm-hmm. But this is where the real tragedy of the last 3 years is. Biden is a terrible president, right? And we all knew it was going to be a train wreck. And obviously it's lived up to every single one of our expectations. But there's a difference between Biden and most other presidents or most other politicians even. Most politicians lie. Mm-hmm. Biden creates fantasy. Mm-hmm. And he sells that fantasy as being real in a way like now with social media and all of that, that either his own party has to come out and say, oh, no, he's literally living in La La Land and he's just making shit up as he goes, or they have to get behind him and sell the lie. Like every single 6 months, in case I'm sure you've noticed this, the Department of Labor comes out and says, oh, all those numbers we gave you on the job creation last year, they were wrong. We were off by like 500,000 jobs and there was less job growth than even like during Trump or anywhere else. And then they just hope the media doesn't pick it up and they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, right wing media does, but right wing, no one cares that we already knew that. Every time I see a new jobs report, this month we added 350,000 jobs. I know it's not real. Mm-hmm. So I don't care I don't read further. I just say, okay, I'll check in 6 months when they tell us that number wasn't real and that they downgraded it to a certain amount and whatever. Same thing with inflation.
Yeah.
You know, inflation is only 3% this year. Yes, but it's been 8% for the last 3 years. So,
exactly.
You know, like you, I love how you're leaving off that everything is 24% higher than it was 3 years ago. And now it's only 27% higher than it was 3 years ago. Like, screw you. But Biden has this, and this has always been Biden. It's not just because he's an old senile man. He's always been like this his whole career. He just makes shit up. And he just says it, and he just hopes that nobody calls him on it. You know, and we've seen that in the last 3 years to a point where anyone who says the economy is doing good is just because they heard Biden and Kamala Harris and the Democrats say it. They have absolutely no proof that that's true. You know, and anyone who says, oh, inflation's under control, like, no, it obviously isn't. The debt's under control. No, it obviously isn't. Like, we have the lowest unemployment ever. Like, yes, people are working nine jobs in order just to survive, and those count as nine jobs. So, no, our unemployment rate isn't lower. There's more people out of work. It's just that more people that had one job now have six.
Correct.
You know? So, no, I don't believe that. I believe that this is a huge part of our societal rot, and it's not going to get better in 2024, especially with a presidential election coming up. We've now gotten so accustomed to people lying to us that we don't know whether things are good or bad. All we know is what we experience ourselves, you know, and that's it. And that's all we can be. Like, I don't believe that all of the people who can't afford, you know, food give a shit that the TV says the job situation is phenomenal and that the stock market is roaring. Like, I don't think any of them care at all. And they're not going to go out there and tell people, like, oh no, the financial situation in this country is phenomenal if they can't afford food. You know, but no one's asking them, because the talking heads on TV are telling us that no, everyone can afford food. There's more food than there ever has been. You know, but like, 3 years ago, I know when I went to the supermarket and I spent a certain amount of money, I know how much food I unloaded at my house. Now, when I go to the supermarket, I am utterly shocked at how little I get for that amount of money, you know? And then you look at, oh, well, they don't count food in inflation. There's a big shock. You know, all of the things that are flying high on prices right now, housing, food, gas, they don't include those in inflation. So yes, a yacht might be cheaper, might be going through a less of an inflationary period than food. But if people can't afford the next phase of their lives, it doesn't matter what the reports say. And I think that more and more you're going to see industries starting to report really bad numbers, because even though they tell you that they've created 20 new computers that are 20 times faster than they were last year, nobody's buying them because people don't have the money. And so they're like, and you'll initially hear people like Biden and all of them coming out, and they'll go, oh no, they just made crappy computers, or they were price gouging because they wanted to rip people off and they were making them too overpriced. No, people just don't have the money to buy them. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And the sooner or later, you can only put the carpet over the dog piss so much. You know, like, sooner or later, people are going to say, oh, wait, no, it's not that the economy is doing good and I'm just in a bad spot. Like, no, the economy is doing terrible because people can't afford to buy all this shit that people are selling. And I think that's why you hear, oh, AI is going to destroy. No. Will it long term? Who knows? But it doesn't matter that AI is there right now. People can't afford the things they need to live on. And I think that more and more you're going to see that come out. And you could only, like, everyone's going to blame everything but you know, what's real. If there weren't so many illegal immigrants in this country, job wages would be flying high. And is that true? To an extent. But no, the wages suck right now. They have been for a long time. Why? Because health insurance is so expensive that any raises that any employer is thinking about giving, they can't, because they have to offer health insurance. And it's so expensive right now. It is so off the charts expensive that they're offering policies that aren't even really healthcare anymore. They're basically like, okay, if you give us $25,000 a year, plus you spend $10,000 a year on healthcare, we'll kick in and pay 80% of your medical bill. You know? And this is a big part of jobs. If every year your employer is paying an additional $5,000 for your healthcare, that's $5,000 of a raise you just got. You just don't notice because you're not getting it in your pocket. you know, because they have to give you healthcare as part of your salary. So your salary just went up $5,000 because that's how much more your healthcare costs. But you don't see it. So you go, hey, my wages have been stagnant for 5 years. I haven't gotten a raise. No, you have. It's just in your healthcare, you know, and I think that more and more people are going, wait a minute, I can't afford anything anymore. And I think that that's going to be the story of 2024, 2025 and the next few years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's terribly true, but, you know, true all the same. Very depressing note to leave on, but I mean, there's so much truth there that, you know, it's good that people are exposed to it, even if it leaves them in horror at the end of this discussion. Halsey, we really traversed a lot of territory in a fairly short period of time. Thank you very much for stopping by tonight.
Absolutely. I can't wait for the next one.
Me either. As a matter of fact, next time around, we're going to be discussing healthcare. So this is a great segue into that. And also, perhaps later in the year, if you're interested in a debate about Zionism with Keith Preston, that would be very interesting to have on the show. Because
I'm happy to talk about that anytime. So
excellent. Yeah, he's very much interested in chatting about it, too. So I think.
Why is he an anti-Zionist?
Yes, he is. From a unique perspective, sort of an anarchist. So it's, okay. You know.
I would be happy to do that whenever you want. So
great. Yeah, I think we could work that in probably for like April or something. But anyway, everyone, thank you very much for having tuned in. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. Halsey's perspective, as always, has been illuminating. I wish you a great night. Please stay safe, be well, and cheers.
Take care.